everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 230, and today is part two with our special guest, Eric Sage, who is going to be covering using notes to succeed in today's real estate market. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. There will be a live session on the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
How is everyone today?
Good, good.
Awesome. Doing awesome. Thanks.
Right, so we're going to continue. Last episode, we talked with Eric a little bit about how he got started, where he is, what he's doing today. And Eric, I know I could just have you talk about creating two notes and selling off one, and you're an expert at that. But I thought today would be even a better idea that you have such experience dealing with notes that there are all these questions that constantly come up, right? That I get asked all the time. Cody's probably being asked. I'm sure that you hear this regularly. So we had touched on that there were some states that are probably better for owner finance than others. Is there something that you look for, or do you care where you will go? If the deal's right, do you go anywhere? Or are there rules, things that you like better in some states than others?
I like to go where the states are landlord friendly and bank friendly. Okay. So obviously I live in Arizona, and so Arizona is very landlord friendly and bank friendly. And so it's in Texas. And so Texas, one of the reasons we like Texas is it's the largest seller financing state in the country. There's more seller finance notes created in
by
Texas by like double. Yeah. I think it's 24% or something crazy. There's a reason, because it's bank friendly. Foreclosure laws are in your favor. It's landlord friendly. And there's also a demographic of borrowers there that want to be homeowners that aren't going to be able to go get traditional bank financing. So that's why we do it. I think it's a big enough, but here's the thing. I will do it anywhere. I have notes, Cody, in the last episode, you asked me, I think I'm in 24, 25 different states right now. I have people that have been paying me for 10, 11 years, that are just happy, little $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 notes now the value of the homes are double. Here's the way I work. And this will answer your question. I will go into different markets. And the reason why is because I know how to underwrite a borrower. And if that borrower fits all the rules and they're willing to put money down and they have, they're probably not credit score wise, but they have the ability to pay and they can show it. I'm good. And because I know what I'm a human being, other than when the banks took the foreclosure crisis in 2000s, was it 2007, 2008? They didn't know how to do what we do. I mean, literally here's how a default happens on the note side world. Okay. Is it's either a long-term problem or a short-term problem. Okay. Yep. That's the question I ask. Hey, what's the deal? My sister-in-law and my brother and I, the three of us signed a loan. I'm using a real example that happened to me. And my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law are going to prison forever. They're never coming out. That's a long-term problem. Okay. They put $28,000 down on this house and she can't afford the payment at all. And so I said, that's easy. Like literally one payment behind, we had the conversation. I said, hey, what can you afford? I can afford this. Okay. Here's what we need to do. I'm going to guide you to where you need to move, to where you can afford, and I'm going to give you majority of your money back. How about that? Okay. Well, cause it made sense. Cause the house appreciated anyway. I just took my own house back without having to foreclose for $10,000, whatever it is. Right.
Yep.
Foreclosure can be $7,000 to $10,000 a payment. So it was an easy conversation and it was the right thing to do. And then I just went and sold it for more money and got more money down and moved on. Right.
Yep.
And I just had another asset. It just happened to be mine that I started over with. And so that's why the fear, people ask me all the time, well, what happens if they don't pay? There's processes and systems to fix it. What do you think banks do? There's millions and millions and millions and millions of loans. They don't have millions and millions of houses. They have millions of loans. Like one person in the servicing department that you pay your mortgage to is in charge of probably a couple thousand assets.
Yep.
And the question you want to ask yourself is how many times, when was the last time you called your bank to have a conversation with them?
I mean, hopefully never.
I don't think I've called. I have mortgages and loans. I can't remember the last. I don't know when the last time I look at it online. There's nothing for me to do because I'm paying, right? So that's so scalable. Or what was the last time a landlord or a tenant called me and said my AC is not working in Arizona, right? This just happened to me last week on one of my rentals. And it took it. I got my AC guy over there, and he went over there, and the damn freaking the filter was clogged. That's why it wasn't working.
Yep.
So who's gonna pay that? I'm not. I mean, I'm gonna try not to because it was her fault.
Yep.
For $70 or whatever the call was. My point is that doesn't happen as a lender, right?
Yep.
And so, and like with multifamily, you talked about if you can get 50, 60, 70, 100 doors under in one location, you can outsource all that. You don't take those calls. Plus you get, so we use our loans as cash flow. And then we use our multifamily as our tax benefits. So we don't have to pay. So we can defer our taxes. I don't want to say don't pay taxes, because we do pay taxes. We pay property taxes, and we pay all the other things that go along with it. Right.
Yep. So when you're looking at these other states, does like usury laws come into play? Cause what kind of interest rate are you typically charging when you sell these properties?
Before you answer, could you give a quick overview of what usury laws even are?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, and you know, it's interesting. So I know what they are in Arizona and Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause that's where I focus mainly, but I don't know them all in the other 48 states. Right. And they change. They do change.
Yep.
And they change with credit card rules. They change with mortgages. They change. There are rules, and you need to know that, because if you go charge 10%, let's say in Pennsylvania, but you can only charge 7 or 6 because of the spread on the usury laws, is that a good investment for you?
Right.
It might be. I mean, you might be able to go because no one else is there. They don't want to do it. You're just getting a better deal. You're still making spread. Because here's the thing: we're buying wholesale, selling retail, so. I buy a house for 50 and sell it for 100 and I can only get 6%. Is that still a good deal for me?
Or I could take over debt at 3.5 and sell it 6. Is that a good enough way, right?
So usury laws are what you legally can charge for interest on credit cards, mortgages, car loans, whatever, right? And every state, depending, you know, where you are, has its own rules, what you can and can't do, right? Can and cannot do. Yep.
So
let me go back to what I do. I right now 10% is the number. Rates have gone up. We're in July of 2022 when this is being recorded.
Yep.
And so we can get, so the way I look at it, I look at affordability and the return I want to get on my investment. Okay. Yep. And so we're not par lenders. We're buying a house at 100, let's say, selling it for 150. I have one right now in actually Louisville. So out of state, right? So that one, I'm into it for 100. I'll sell for 150 to 160. I'll get my 10% down. I'll charge 10% interest. But that 10% interest is in line with rents, or maybe a little higher than rent, right? And that's how I come up with my number, because it has to be, there's an affordability factor. I'm not charging them $2,000 a month when rent's $1,000. Does that make sense?
So on a $500,000 house, this is why this can be a little confusing, right? That, hey, if your payment is $4,800 or $4,400, that might not be affordable in that particular market if you were going to try to charge 10% interest.
Right. No, So for me, I try to stick to a median home price. But I just got an email today for rentals in my neighborhood, and you can't get a rental in my neighborhood for under $10,000, for $9,000. 9,000 is the cheapest rental you can get in my neighborhood. I'm like, what? That's crazy.
Yeah. It's a, you probably could do, you know,
so why would
finance up to go what?
I can sell or finance that, you know, all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, so when you talk about, Jeff, you and I talk about the niche in that higher market. I love it. Yeah. I love the nice houses. Because guess what? I have a real good feeling I could go offer terms at 0% and pay market for a house, go wrap that up, let it sit and run as long as I want, because I'm getting principal only payments while I'm getting $9,000 in principal and interest payments.
Right.
I mean, you wake up 10 years from now, do a 10-year balloon on that. I mean,
you got to do.
Well, I mean, we could calculate it. What if you're getting if it's 9,000 a month times 120 months, that's $1 million that you just paid down on a principal only payment to somebody right. that offered you 0%.
Yep.
And I can promise you, if I sold it just for the, just even, but I charge them 6% par, right?
3%, 3.5%.
You double your money. I can promise you that, if not yep. more.
Right.
Because their payoff and we know how amortization works. So that's the cool thing. If you guys play around with when you're listening to Jeff and you guys are listening to these podcasts, play around with amortization. It'll blow your mind that the amount of money that's why banks do what they do. And then they want to offer you to refinance. But now we're going to tell people don't refinance. Let's start another par loan over here and create the spread just like any bank would.
I think it's really interesting when we were interviewing Nick, you know, Nick went through the spreadsheet, the model, and you know, in 10 years on a second note that you're charging 10.5%, it's paid down by like $2,000 or $2,500. And you know, it's basically still intact 10 years in. All the payments you've gotten is almost like pure profit.
Pure profit.
Yeah.
No, that's the niche to this. So this is my feeling, single family, the appreciation and depreciation that you would receive on a single family home if you just kept it as a rental. I think now with the way rates are, if you match them up 10 years from now between just straight up rental, pay all the expenses, the turnovers, the repairs, the property management fees, the taxes, the insurance, and all that stuff. A straight simple interest loan that you become the lender on will blow that away, even with the tax benefits. That's my opinion.
Yep.
And then the great thing is here's something I want to share with you, because I thought about it today. Is when you're networking, I had a title agent, and so I'm sitting down at a self-directed IRA company at a presentation. I'm in the back of the room. I'm a pigeon back there, giving the intermediate seller people that are sitting in the room learning about how they can self-direct the retirement money into real estate or whatever, right? So this someone asked me the question, hey, Eric, what do you do? And I said, well, I go out, I find these deals, and I'm just looking for money to fund my deals. Great. So I think I've raised millions and millions of dollars. So I had this one lender, and I just paid him off for the first time completely in 10 years, okay? Mm-hmm. But he had this title agent. He would only use her. He would only use that title company. He would only do this one thing. He was an old dude, and he's just like, this is my thing. And I said, okay, great. And I really didn't like her very much. She was rude. She wasn't responsive. And she just, her job was to take care of him, right? Not me, right? So anyway, long story short, but I was nice to her, you know, and I did my best. And so long story short, about 8 months ago, she calls me. She says, Eric, I have this guy, he's getting some loans paid off. And I know you borrow money from some of these private lenders, and it's a different guy. And so she introduces me to him, and I go and have lunch with him. He still has a flip phone. Okay. He drives an old pickup truck. He lives in the west side of town, not a million years. And so that you would know his wealth, right? It's crazy. So I ended up not doing any, I was going to do some business with him, but it didn't work out. And so last week he called me, cause he had some questions regarding his note portfolio and what the value would be on this note portfolio. And I'm like, okay. So I find out, asking him some questions, that he has, This is just a small portion of his portfolios. He has $50 million worth of notes.
Wow.
Small portion, you said?
That's just a small portion of his, okay. Of his net worth. And so I said, $50 million? Wow. Yeah, he makes $250,000 a month in income off of that. And he was just asking me for some advice. And so my point was, when I was thinking about, because you have beginners listening to this, but like your network is so important. You never know. Like, can you imagine, like there's a high probability that that I'm going to be doing some really, really high level business with him in the near future, knowing why he called me. He's not dying or anything, but there's some stuff happening in his life that he wants to change. And he wants me to be be involved because he trusts and knows what I do. So that was one of the things that I wanted to share with the group, because you can't ever have enough money. You can never have enough money. You know, Jeff, you've got this multifamily deal, like all this stuff like that we're talking about, you know, it's a circle of love that we all have, that we'll be able to make money together. So you just never know when those
and don't judge a book by its cover either. You never know who may have a whole bunch of money.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does, and he loves the note world because he knows it's so scalable. Right. And so, and here's the thing. He services his own. He does everything that I wouldn't do. Like he services his own notes.
Oh, wow.
He pays all the taxes, insurance. I'm just like, whoa, what are you doing, dude? For $22,000 a month, you can outsource all of that and look at your report once for an hour a month at the most. Right. Yeah. He's got some good payers. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Let me ask you, Eric, what are your thoughts about, and I don't even know if you do use these techniques, but do you ever buy and or sell on land contract or contract for deed?
Yeah, good question. So yes, I do. I've bought. So a few years back, if I bought a house subject to, let's say, I took over the existing seller's payments, I'd buy that on a wrap. I'd buy it. They would sell. They'd create a note and sell me the house and wrap it around their existing note, right?
Yep.
And then I would sell it on. And I do an exact wrap, and then I would give them some income. A lot of the sellers that I buy from, I give them income off their 2.9% interest rate because it's so valuable, right? Yeah. So I give them a little bit of income, and if there's ever a problem or there's an insurance or something happens, they're going to help me, right? Yep. Or if they just forget about it, you know, and go to their retirement home,
they don't
or
take wherever they're call. Going.
Yeah, they'll take our call because I'm paying them every month. They get a right. check from Eric. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
So that's my model. It could be $50. It could be $500. I mean, whatever makes financial sense for us to do the deal. Right.
Yep.
So then I would sell it on an agreement for sale or a contract for deed because I would be able to take the property back quicker if there was a default. Right. That was my mentality.
Yep.
I've changed that recently because I own contract for deeds. And notes. And what I found was once they have enough equity and skin in the game, it's a foreclosure anyway. Yeah. I mean, and guess what? When I all my contract for deeds, I have a full-time assistant, not a full-time, but I have a part-time assistant that literally handles all my taxes insurance on my contract for deed portfolio because I'm on the title, my company is, and I get all the payments, I get all the taxes and insurance and stuff. So personally for me, and Nick will attest to this. You know, he's like, we're similar. If banks did it, then they would do it. Banks don't do that. Banks don't do contract for deeds.
Yeah.
Banks don't do that. So I don't do it. My opinion is a foreclosure or a forfeiture in my mind, based off of the borrowers that I'm selling homes to and the amount of money they're putting down, it's a foreclosure anyway. And I'm going to help fix their problem. There's going to be people literally that disappear like completely.
Yep.
And you're going to have to go foreclose or do some sort of forfeiture that way. But the attorneys know what to do and they'll fix it. That's my opinion on the agreement for sale, contract for deed topic.
So you're not really, as far as you're concerned, you're not too worried about the due on sale clause, either when you're buying or when you're, again, wrapping to an end buyer. Is that pretty safe to say?
Yeah. So if I'm buying a house subject to the existing debt with 2.93%, I mean, there's loans out there 7 or 8 years old right now that have under 3% loans. Like,
yeah,
that's the biggest asset in the world, right? And so so when I sell on terms, if I sell it on seller financing, I'm creating the first and second. So if there is a due on sale clause, I mean, you can go on any Facebook group that does credit financing and they talk about sub two and how great it is and whatever, right?
Yep.
There are due on sale things happening out there, and they're going to lose all their money on, because they're going to have to fix the problem, because you're going to harm the consumer. The consumer is your buyer that bought the property from you.
Right.
You're fully disclosing. There's so many things you can do. Like, I haven't done this recently, but the more I do subject twos, which we will be doing a lot in the near future, is, and I sell it on terms, which is my intent, to find a buyer that needs financing, I'll put a clause in there. I disclosed that I took over a house subject to, and I'm selling it to you on terms. It's full disclosure. Everybody knows what's going on.
Yep.
The other thing I thought about talking to an attorney is, if it does get called due, you deed the house back to me. I go get better payments and we refinance it and give it back to you. We could do that. There's so many things, just as long as it's disclosed in the contract and you're not harming the seller, the buyer, I think you're going to be fine. And that's the end result. But worst case is, like Nick and I talk about,
sell the note.
Create a first and second, sell the dang note. I mean, it's a 10% note.
Yep.
And amortized. Like, what kind of passive return do you want? You know? Right.
What about, we talked about wrapping. Obviously, mm-hmm. You're okay with wrapping, whether you're, when you're buying and when you're selling. But are there underlying loans that you stay away from wrapping, or that you have problems wrapping, VA, FHA, anything like that?
So I love VAs, because there's no mortgage insurance on it. I love VAs. I love conventional. FHA, I'll do. I mean, it just, the math has to work. The thing with FHA, there's mortgage insurance, so it has an additional cost to the deal.
Yep.
But I mean, the rates are so low, then you would do it. Do we have is there anything illegal taking over an FHA loan? It's no, like most title companies won't insure them. But in my opinion, I'll close on it and then they can insure my second loan, so I'm covered there. But yeah. The reality is, we took over the debt, we're arbitraging it and go from there. So I'm not worried about any of those loans. And here's the end result is, if the seller's on board, I mean, you're really, Jeff, good at this. Like, you're really good at talking to sellers and saying, listen, and your team is our intent is to go find a home for another person, a tenant buyer, whatever words you want to use. I think people can understand what tenant buyer is. When you talk about seller financing, it gets confused. But I'm going to sell a house to a tenant buyer, to a family that isn't able to get a traditional bank loan. And I've been doing this 1,000 times. I'm very qualified. I have the money to pay off the loan, and I want to provide homeownership for other people, and I want to make some money in the middle, and you can too. So why not? And so if you people get that, you know, they do. If they don't, and then here's the thing, they get it and then they forget about it and they just collect your money.
That's right.
They have short-term memory as well.
Yep.
Something that I was curious about is, so these are amortized over 30 years, the notes that you create, are they often on 30-year balloons, or is it pretty variable on how you set them up?
Right now in today's environment, sell a house on terms. I sell the house, I create a mortgage just like a bank would, 10% interest, 30-year term. Nope, we don't charge points, probably should. We made all our money on the buy, so we don't have to crush them on that. They pay the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and servicing fees. So it's very predictable. And it's PITIS. And then if there is a change in the servicing agreement or whatever, where it goes up because inflation or whatever, it's added to the borrower. So it's very disclosed in what we do. So it's a very predictable income for what we get.
So you're not doing any balloons?
No balloons. And with owner, because we're selling to owner occupants. Majority of our borrowers are owner occupants, and we don't do balloons with owner occupants.
But you're paying cash for a lot of the properties, hard money or cash. So you're just going to sell that note and get that debt taken out.
So, traditional deal, I'll look at a deal we're doing right now. It's a $300,000 exit. So we're into it for 200 all in. We're going to sell the house for 300, which is market. We did a little rehab to it, sell it on terms for 300 with 50,000 down. So now the buyer owes $250,000 at, I think it's 9.95, but I think it actually is 10. But it's right in line with what rent would be, because rents are off the charts in our market right now. So they're happy to a fixed mortgage. They can refinance anytime they want. Sure. And then we'll create a first for 200 and a second for 250. That first lien that we keep or resell, you know, we resell that first lien at 200,000. We'll take out our underlying debt or our cost, and we'll be left with a $50,000 second at 10% interest and rinse and repeat.
Yep. Yeah. What if you are, let's say that same example, but you took over that property subject to, and your seller wants.
I'd be happier.
Well, if your seller said, I'm willing to let you do it, but I'm not letting you do it for the length of the loan.
Great question. So let's just say typically on terms, when you want to buy a house on terms, that 30 years is a long time.
You're right.
You know, you're going to offer it 30 years, but what if you get 10 principal only payments,
sure.
You know, equal payments, 300 months, 360 months of equal payments. Let's say it's 300 months, equal payments, which is the wording I used, with a 10-year balloon. Well, I mean, if it's $1,000 a month, I mean, gosh, that's $120,000. I'm going to ride that out for 10 years. And then at the end, I'm going to either pay it off or sell that note, you know, and keep the second, but yeah. you're going to party all day long with that first lien because you're just cramming it down. In fact, you probably could pay the thing off completely in 10 years. And then you get 20 more years free and clear on the first and second.
Yep.
So yes, I will do that. So that's basically you're selling long, borrowing short with a balloon is what you're saying, but I'll do that all day long.
Yes. So you'd still probably structure the sale to your buyer the same way with a first and a second.
100%.
And then, hey, when my balloon comes due, I already know what you're going to do. You're going to go back to the seller and say, would you like to keep going and extend that term out with the seller, see if you can continue to do that. And then you fall back is, hey, I'll just sell off the note and pay you off. And
100%. Yeah. Oh, because here's the thing, Mr. Seller. Yeah, I know I was paying you $1,000 a month, but how about I pay you $1,200 a month? Because you know you're getting $1,700. Like,
right.
And 10 years is a long time. And if the seller comes to you 3 years in, I have a friend that does a lot of what we do. Every single year, he contacts all the seller finance sellers and offers to buy out their term.
Yeah,
but it's for half or less than
discount,
half.
Right?
Yep. And what happens is, because we know the traditional note buyer wants a 7 to 10% return on their money, so that's what it is. That's the offer you make based off of that. That's why you always, when you do seller financing, you write a first refusal to buy the note that they created to you.
Yep.
Because you want to buy your own note because you're going to get to buy it at a discount because you created a 0% to 5% loan or whatever. So that's one of the biggest things that people don't really understand is how valuable that asset is. As soon as you, I mean, I'm members of a couple other groups and I see these 0% interest. Someone just posted something today. He's like, oh, I got my duplex at 0% interest, blah, 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 blah. And I just sent him a text. I go, did you get first right of refusal on that note? And did you get the transfer collateral? Because you're going to sell it, maybe. And you want to move that debt to wherever you want to move it.
Yep.
You know, so, so important. People don't think about that. You know, some of the biggest gurus in the world that are teaching this stuff, they're not doing it. I'm like, that's the asset. How many of those do you need?
Yeah.
I mean, literally you could overpay for a house at 0% interest and then go move. Let's say it's $1 million. You go move that to four assets at 0% interest at 252. You just, I mean, your cash flow just went nuts.
Yep.
Right. So important. And it's just wording in your note.
Well, and right? We're almost there. We're I'm going to ask you that question.
Okay.
But I know this question comes up all the time. I think I've even asked you this question, is when you are doing a wrap, how do you handle the insurance?
So great question. So it's the worst part about doing a sell. I mean, I've done it right and wrong. And like, so when I first started, I would just get my own insurance and keep theirs in place.
Right.
That's a disaster waiting to happen, because if there is a fire, who covers the thing?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which insurance company? Yours or theirs? I've had it happen.
Yeah.
Guess who covered it? Theirs.
They're not yours.
Not mine. Mine didn't even know what happened. They don't know anything. Like, I mean, I had a fire on one of my notes. I didn't know what happened. They just called me and says, hey, I got an insurance claim. I need to pay you off. And I'm left with $10,000 because my double wide burned to the ground, and that's all they had insured. And so I'm going to scrape the property and just keep it. Yep. That was it. And I got my full payoff. So to answer your question, there's a bunch of different ways to structure it. So you can, one of the ways we're doing it now is, before we close, the insurance is transferred to the, our insurance. We get new, the seller gets new insurance that we know and like and trust. Okay. They're now insured, named the mortgagees, the additional insured mortgagee, let's say it's Wells Fargo that you said you took over sub to. They're insured, they're covered. And then when we buy it, then, and we resell it, then we're named as additional insured as well. And the borrower keeps that same insurance in place, because you want one insurance. That's it. You have multiple, because it's easy to pay $45 for an extra insurance policy on a 2.9% loan that you just got, and at least you're covered. Well, it becomes a nightmare in regards to insurance if there are claims, right? So that's what we're doing now.
Are you getting an intermediary insurance policy when you buy before you have your new buyer?
I'm not.
So then you're finding your new buyer.
I need to.
You're finding your new buyer. That buyer becomes the primary insured. The borrower, the seller is the additionally insured, as you are. Mm-hmm. And the bank remains loss payee or
100%.
Right?
Yep.
I would agree with you.
That's the cleanest way, because now what happens is when you sell the property, and then now there's all these new names on the policy. And if you have your insurance provider send Wells Fargo the loss payee, and it says their name on it, that's all they care about. Let's look at this at a big picture.
Yep.
Just as long as it says exactly what the bank needs it to say, is all it needs to say. It's a checkbox, it's done.
Yep.
People are always worried about switching insurances, and then it would trigger the due on sale clause. Let's go back to the department. I know, because I talk to my own servicers all the time about my borrowers. It's a department that they don't. I mean, there's technology out there to see the house transfer, and they can call notes on due on sale clauses and everything. But the majority of those notes that are written are packaged off and gone. It's the small banks that keep their own loans that are going to be calling those due on sale, because they have to.
Yeah.
Right. Those banks have to do it because of the rules that they have. The small banks, the big ones, I don't even know if they would even know.
Well, and the small ones that do like down payment assistance are notorious for, they'll call the loan due every time. All right. A couple more questions and we'll wrap
up. But the insurance, I would love to have a separate, we'll have a separate call, but the insurance is a big question on how everyone structures it. And I have a whole diagram on how I do it, but there's some gap time on when you're doing this stuff to make it work, but it's just part of your closing package.
Yeah.
It's just a process, right?
Yep. So you always use a servicer, right?
Yep.
People ask me all the time, who do you like? Who's your best servicer? And I know you probably have two or three. And let's not talk about Texas, because I know you have a preferred one there, right?
August REI. We like August REI in Texas because they have our systems and processes and everything in place. I use FCI Lender Services outside of Texas. I use Westar. I use Evergreen. I like FCI personally. It's easy. Their platform's easy to use. It's easy to log into. I'm actually looking at Madison.
Yeah, right you're now. Looking at a new one. That's the combination.
I sent them to you as well. Yeah. I'm looking at Madison right now because they'll originate and service.
Yeah.
And doc prep. They'll do it all.
Yeah.
Now, what people say and what they'll do is a little scary. So I would test them and see how it goes and use a transaction coordinator to help you do everything correctly. I mean, the transaction, I will tell you, as you note create, create notes on single family homes, the transaction coordinators are the key to the whole operation because they do everything and there's a lot of moving parts, but for them, it's just another checkbox.
Yeah.
For me as a note creator and a deal guy, and raising private capital guy, doing all the little things in the
you
middle
don't want to
is
do
not
it.
What I want to do, and I'm not good at it, and I don't plan on being good at it.
All right, so let me ask you one other question about servicing. So I'm curious, if you have a subject to deal or a wrap, an exact wrap, or any kind of deal with an underlying mortgage, and you have a servicer, and I'm guessing that you're getting a limited power of attorney, authorization to release, and online access, if possible, right, to the loan information. Are you keeping all of that for yourself? Do you pass that on to your servicer? Because what if that loan gets sold? Who figures that out and then, relays that message?
If the underlying loan gets, so Wells Fargo sells it to
Bank of America.
What happens?
Yeah.
Well, so the key to all of this is to do it on the, that's why you hire a transaction coordinator, because I forget, I just did one. I went against all the rules that I go by because it was a simple deal and I forgot. That's not what happened. The note was written. I hired a different attorney in a different state because in South Carolina, and I have them they wrote the note for me. They wrote it at 0%. And I'm like, whoa, wait. Thank God I had the contract written right and the attorney did it wrong. We fixed it and we got the note and all that stuff. But my point is if it's sold and you have all the power of attorney, You have the address change. So here's what Nick does.
I'm just trying to figure out who would be notified. Would it be you or would it be your certain? Who are you trying to make monitor? Those kinds of things. When you start owning 50, 75, 100 notes, and you've got 30 that have underlying debt, taxes change. Who is notified of that so that the servicer now knows, hey, send out a new amount to collect and all of that. So who monitors all that and how does that all get figured out?
So for me, I have it two ways. I do it. I have the letters come to our business office so I know that it happens.
But
in the future, because of the scalability that we're looking at, it'll all get done at servicing. The servicers, that's their job. They get all the notifications for that specific property. It's all on the portal. Everything is there. It's very easy. That's how I do it now. Okay. I want the servicer to handle everything. Nick and I agree on that. He doesn't touch a thing. Now, there are when escrow changes, and taxes change and insurance changes, or there's different amounts. That's the servicer's job. That's what they do for the bank. So just treat it like a bank would. The banks aren't collecting. It's all being done that way. So how I would do it is I'd have a servicer that can handle all of that.
Yeah.
And if the borrower is not paying for it, I would pay extra for it because it's worth it. Totally worth it. Yeah.
All right. So last question, then we'll wrap this up. So, and I know you've already mentioned a few of them, but how about your three, four best clauses to make sure that you include in your note package when you when you're buying?
When I'm buying, when a seller sells on that, when the okay, well, so I love the transfer of collateral.
Okay.
So if you sell me your Jeff, you sell me your house, and you sell me the house at $200,000, which is $20,000 over what market is, and it, it's really worth $180,000, and you sell it to me for $200,000, but you give me terms at 0% or with a 10-year balloon. I always want to have the first, the right of first refusal to buy that note. Okay. I want and the transfer collateral if I want to be able to move that money wherever I want.
Okay.
And the terms on that, the attorneys, here's what I do. I have my, I send it to my attorneys and I tell them, this is what I want, and make sure it's in the note. The note
is written. You become specific on that one, because that one can be a little complicated.
The transfer collateral is very, and I don't have the clause, the term in front of me exactly, yeah. But it's very, so, and I'm glad you brought that up, because what if I transfer that collateral, okay, that note to another property, it has to be like property, and it has to be at the loan to value that they lent me the money at.
At least as good, right?
Yeah. So think about how powerful that is. They just sold me the dang house for $20,000 over what it's worth.
Yep.
Do you think I could go put it on another property for 100% financing?
Let me ask you, my guess, because I just dealt with this literally within the last, this week, on a substitution of collateral deal that I had done. And my seller was confused from day one.
Yeah.
He had this idea of what was going to happen, and that, you know, I sold the property that I was buying within 3 weeks. So yes. I had a choice, and I'm like, do I want to use this money or do I want to sell on terms? So I'm going to use the money. Well, immediately,
what rate was it at? What did you
2.5%.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And when I cashed it out, he's like, well, you can't, I don't want to release the lien. And I'm like, you have to release the lien. And yeah, you know, and what we had set up was that money would be held in the escrow account, right? Yeah. At the title company. And until I found a property that met the criteria, and I had the same criteria, which was,
and you'd keep making the payments during that.
Yeah, period. No, I'm still making payments regardless.
Okay. So at this point, it's totally secure.
He refused to allow the money to ever sit in escrow. He wouldn't do it. And so then I found a property that I'm like, all right, I can leave this here semi-long term. And I'm only leaving a portion of the money, but I'm putting the whole note on that property. So I still have use of some money to, you know, and that way he didn't have to come sign anything with, you know, any releases or whatever. But I've done it a number of times, and this is the only time that I've ever had a problem. But let me ask you, and this is for me, not for our listeners, but what I told them, look, I don't have any free and clear properties I can just go put this money to, like, in the next 3 days. I can find something quickly, but I said I have some out of state. But now you're dealing with a title company that, you know, is local, that's not going to. So keep that in mind, at least as far as I'm aware, that you're going to do that, and you call it transfer of collateral. I call it substitution of collateral.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're moving that. You have 10 years to use this money for whatever you want to, basically, but it has to be secured to a property.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Does it say first lien, second lien, third lien? No.
And I have even a better one where we can divide it into pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Which is even better. Now you don't have to try to make it all fit, right? So, and he'll actually lend whatever first or second position. He's fine. So, okay. Any other clauses?
So when I sell on terms, Yeah. I get the right of a first refusal to buy the house back if they ever decide to sell.
Okay.
That's always a good one.
Yeah.
So I sell it on terms. So what it does is I buy it. Let's do the perfect storm. I buy on terms at 0%. I get first right of refusal to buy the note. Okay. I can move that. If I ever sell or the house is refinanced and that debt is off that property, I can move it to another property,
yep,
like property, for the rest of that term. Okay. Then when I resell it, I'm going to get the right of first refusal to buy the house back. So if I sell a house today at $250,000 and they go to want to resell it, they have to notify me and give me the right to buy it.
Yep.
Because if I have debt on it, why wouldn't I? So I'm probably going to be your best buyer.
Right.
Most likely.
Yeah.
So basically I'm building. So you're controlling everything on all parts of the transaction.
Yeah.
During the process. I had another clause I wanted to tell you about.
Well, and you're going to disclose, right? Like that there's a potential underlying debt and due on sale and everyone is clear on what could happen.
Yes. Yes, you are. I'm going to, I had some other terms I wanted to tell you real quick before I,
good.
The substitution of collateral. Yes. I like, let's see. Yeah. I think those are yeah, are so important.
Yeah.
They're so important, you know, creating a first and second, if there is a due on sale clause on a subject to deal, you know, being able to sell that first and protect that borrower. So, I mean, there's not that many, but they're important. The ones that people never do are so important, you know, especially,
right,
especially now in, yep, today's environment. It's probably never been more important now than ever, in my, yeah, opinion. What do you think?
I totally agree. And people ask me, how do you get the substitution of collateral? And it's like, when you're paying close to retail or more, right, which you can do with creative finance, that, hey, now you've got to get substitution of collateral. I mean, the last thing that you want is like your buyer saying, hey, I can refinance in 3 months. And now you've got a problem. So that's the way that you have to protect yourself. And hey, it's like, look, for me to pay you this price, which is more than what you're ever going to get, this is what I need to be able to do.
Yeah. No, I think that these are conversations that you just want to have. And that's why you created this podcast, and to be able to share this stuff, because people don't know. I mean, we know because we do this all the time, you know.
And things change too. There's strategies that I used years ago that are different now. And for some of it may be that I've changed or my business model has changed. Some of it's the markets that I work in. Some of it's just, you know, how the market has changed. But creative finance just opens so many more doors, and it gives you so many opportunities to do things that you could never even get involved with if you were just, all I can do is offer cash.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. A lot of people that sell our houses, sell to us on terms, is they're protecting themselves from themselves. One, they're protecting themselves from they're protecting their family. Cause there's a lot of people that own a lot of real estate. A lot of tired landlords are like, the tired landlord is like your ultimate seller on terms. Them. Cause they already get the cash flow. They just don't want to deal with the frigging problems anymore. Right. And then you're willing to take on those problems, but you just do it differently, right? And so
or not, and just sell on terms, right?
And what a lot of them will do is they will go out longer term because they don't want to, if they did pass away or something happened, they don't want their family members to get a lump sum payout and hurt themselves. A lot of people that are wealthy, their kids and their family members aren't skilled enough to handle the opportunity. You know, that was a conversation I had with one of my investors. He's like, I would love to give them income, not lots of cash, because they will hurt themselves. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's the other thing, is how to structure your estate. But that's for me though. If I was going to, you know, the takeaway for me is if you put yourself in a position to be the person in your market or your community or your networks that you're in nationwide, that you're the person that provides terms for people that aren't able to get traditional bank financing, and you can provide home ownership for people and teach other people how to do the same thing. So you do it and then you teach it and the deal flow comes. That's the opportunity. And so when you have homeowners I tell the story where there's a family, they say $20,000 when the husband and wife had been working at the same Mexican food restaurant for like 18 years. They saved every penny, and I sold them the house, and they're all great payers, but they're great. Like,
yeah,
they're just boom, automatic. And, yep. and they can't be happier. So that's a scalable model that will be out there. And so if you simplify it, like, we can dig into the details on exactly how to structure the note and have the due on sale, the transfer collateral or collateral substitution or any of the techie stuff.
Yep.
But the end result creates a lot of opportunity for everyone.
No doubt. Cody, do you have any last questions for Eric?
No, I just wanted to say thank you for hopping on. I know Nick had talked about the Facebook group, Creative Dealmakers. Is there anything else, anywhere else people can check you out, learn more about you?
Yeah, so Facebook is probably our number one. You go to Creative Dealmaker. That's how you can find us. We do calls pretty much every week. Then we share all these cool ideas and what we're working on in today's market. We have a great community there. I mean, I think we have over 3,000 people in our group now sharing ideas. And personally, I'm not that active in the group because I take all the information in the group and then I share it one time just to try to be efficient. Because I feel like if I'm individually responding to individuals, I'm not helping the community. So I'd rather, just this conversation we have with Substitution Cloud, like, everybody should be able to hear that in a group, and then it clicks, So that's how we run our group. We have some coaching. We have a coaching model now, but it's all the information is in our Facebook group. That's our community, and we're pretty proud of it, and we're excited. So I appreciate you guys having me on, man. Anytime you want me to come back on, let me know. I'd love to share.
There's got to be another time because there's more things I could have talked to you about. We could have gone another one or two episodes and people would be like, yeah, keep going. Cause it's kind of like one of our phone conversations, Eric. It just, we just find things to talk about. So I really appreciate it. I appreciate getting to know you over the last, I don't know what it's been, 6-7 months. I'm part of your coaching program, and I truly enjoy learning from you. And thank you for doing this for all our listeners. I really appreciate it.
Like you said, anytime. I obviously can tell I have a passion for it, like you do. So anytime we can just hang out and talk real estate, I'm up for it.
Well, thank you again. Thank you, Cody. And hey, everyone, go out and create some terms. See you.